Hernandez.
Your Honor, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. My name is David Hernandez. I represent the petitioner, CSI Aviation Services. Judge Tatel, about 3 years ago, you wrote a very good case, Safe Extensions v. FAA, that addresses administrative procedure.
He's written some good ones since then as well.
I'll cite that one just because
I
was here when it was argued. But in the case, you wrote, no one pretends that judicial review of agency action is a pleasant day at the beach for agencies. And although escaping judicial review would, of course, be less disruptive, and I'll paraphrase, to the agency's operations, it would leave regulated entities as well as the flying public, which depends on its safety on solid and well-supported FAA decision-making, unprotected from arbitrary and capricious agency action. I think that's exactly what we have here, arbitrary and capricious agency action.
Well, could you start with the question of whether we have final agency action?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why don't we start there?
Your Honor, we have final...
I don't think Safe Extensions helps you on that.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, we have final agency action because we really had no appeal rights based on the warning letter that was sent out by the agency.
What do you do with... I just have one very simple question about this, okay? Supreme Court says in Standard Oil, and we said in many of our cases, that when an agency commences administrative enforcement proceedings, right?
Yes, sir.
Commences administrative enforcement proceedings, that's not final agency action. Right? You agree with that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if that's not final, how can a letter threatening to commence enforcement proceedings be final?
Your Honor, that's distinguishable. I think similar to the case at the DOT site in Standard Oil.
Well, that's what I just asked you about. Standard Oil says that an enforcement, the initiation of an agency enforcement proceedings is not final, even though it puts the regulated company to a choice between either complying or defending against the enforcement action. And I just said this one question. So if that's the case, how can a letter threatening an enforcement proceeding be final? I can't get beyond that.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, that case is distinguished. I think the facts in this case are distinguishable because in this case, the warning letter was in effect or a de facto extension of the department's.
No, but the company could have ignored the warning letter and forced the government to initiate enforcement proceedings, right? The statute specifically says that. The agency can't make a final determination without. I'm looking at section 4631C says that with respect to the statutes, the regulations we're talking about, the secretary may impose a civil penalty only after notice and opportunity for hearing.
Yes, Your Honor, but in this case, I think this is more similar to Abbott Laboratories where...
Yeah, but Abbott Laboratories was an enforceable regulation. The agency had the authority under the statute to issue a regulation that was immediately enforceable and impose immediate obligations. And we've long held that those can be challenged, but here there was no... The choice you had, it's a tough choice, right? You either have to comply, in which case, and you may not want to, or you have to defend against an agency administrative proceeding, but Standard Oil says that's not final agency action.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the agency didn't issue a complaint, and they had the option to issue the complaint rather than issue the warning letter.
Yeah, but you're only challenging the letter. What's the date of this letter? November?
The October 16th.
October 16th letter. That's what you're challenging.
Yes, Your Honor. And in that case, I mean, in the October 16th letter, again, it was the consummation of the DOT's rulemaking process. They spent a year determining whether or not to issue that letter. They reviewed thousands of documents that we submitted as well as other charter brokers submitted. They've had meetings with the GSA. albeit not productive meetings, but they did have meetings, and we would submit that this is more of akin to a rulemaking or perhaps a de facto rulemaking or some type of informal adjudication that resulted in a significant policy change.
You know, the letter itself, the October 16th letter itself makes this pretty clear. It says, if the company immediately ceases from new contracts and ceases all activities governed by existing contracts, we will refrain from taking enforcement action. So they made it quite clear there that they couldn't do anything without enforcement action.
Your Honor, in our position, yeah, that the department had no statutory authority to pursue any type of enforcement action.
It didn't?
Ultimately...
Wait, it didn't have the authority to pursue... I mean, it might be wrong about the ultimate issue here, but where does that come from, that it can't even initiate an enforcement proceeding?
With respect to this specific area, i.e., dealing with the regulation of GSA contracts, it's our position that the ability to regulate GSA contracts, or de facto who the GSA enters into contracts with, is protected.
That's your defense to the enforcement action. That's where you make that argument. They initiate enforcement proceedings. You say they don't have authority to regulate this kind of aviation activity. If you lose, that's what you appeal.
Counsel, do you have cases in which we've conducted judicial review of pre-enforcement actions?
No, Your Honor.
How about Sibagaygi? What happened in Sibagaygi? Wasn't that just a letter from an agency official?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with that case.
Okay.
I think what we're relying on here primarily is on Abbott Laboratories and the fact that this is more akin to an informal adjudication and expansion of the department's rulemaking authority with respect to government contracts.
Mm-hmm. But Abbott Labs, your best case?
Your Honor, we think so,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I think Sibagaygi might be better, but...
with respect to the government's action in this case, we attempted to, at the meeting we had with the government on November 24th, discuss potential appeal rights that we had. And they specifically said that, look, the only appeal rights you have is to violate the order and violate the federal law and sub yourself in enforcement action. We specifically followed up with them to determine whether or not we could pursue a petition for review. And they were essentially silent on that matter. So we were essentially left with trying to guess what our appeal rights were in this matter. Absent any type of clear guidance on this, we decided that a petition for review was the only option, given that we believe that this was a final order in view of Abbott. And based on that, we certainly believe that the government's actions in this matter are arbitrary. I think that what the government did essentially is investigated this, did not talk to the GSA, and then after they made their decision, decided to talk to the GSA, and after they spoke with the GSA, reversed their decision. That, by definition, should be arbitrary and capricious action. Notwithstanding the question of final order, I think that the agency...
Well, we can't notwithstand the question of final order.
Yes, Your Honor.
If it's not a final order, we're not here.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, we submit that the warning letter was indeed a final order because it has all the characteristics of a final order. It was a consummation of the Department of Transportation's rulemaking process. It extended rights or obligations or denied rights.
What are the legal consequences that change? Bennett tells us that's one of the things we have to look at.
That's going to be your Abbott Labs question.
Well, it denied us the right to enter into contracts with the GSA, and for that matter, denied everyone that is in the air charter broker industry the right to enter into contracts.
The letter itself did that. After the letter, you couldn't enter into contracts with GSA?
That's correct.
That's the question I had. What is the status now?
Well, right now, Your Honor, we're subject to a one-year tentative exemption that...
When does it expire?
Expires in April 15th, 2011, unless the government issues some issue or prevents its rulemaking in this matter. We don't believe that that would happen or will happen simply because it's taken over 3 years, to do anything with respect to their advance notice of rulemaking. Basically, we don't believe that the government's going to extend the rulemaking or perform any rulemaking in this matter.
Thank you, counsel. We used up your time. We'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. We're doing that to everyone this morning. Hear from the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. Despite petitioner's focus on many other issues, the government's principal position is that this case is moot.
Well, I'm worried about your mootness argument. Your final agency action argument is a different story, but right this minute, they're still subject to your letter order, if they ever were. They're still subject to it, and as a matter of grace, you're giving them till April. Is that really moot?
Actually, Your Honor, as the petitioner has itself conceded, the exemption supersedes the warning letter, and in fact, the warning letter...
What happens in April 15? According to the exemption, it's a one-year exemption. It expires in April, absent some other action on your part. It expires in April, and the letter is just as effective as it ever was. If it was ever effective, it becomes just as effective as ever, right?
Well, it's standard practice for the agency when exemptions are issued for them to be issued for 1 year, and in this exemption...
Did that answer my question? I don't care if it's standard practice or not. In April, that exemption runs out, right?
Yes, you're...
So at that point, the letter then becomes as effective as it ever was, right?
Well, the department would not revert to that letter because, as indicated in the final order, the department has determined that this action, this exemption, and the actions by CSI are in the public interest. So, as a practical matter, it would be essential.
What final order is that you're referring to?
The exemption order.
Is that a final order?
Yes, it is. The exemption order.
That
is
one's
a final order. Yes.
But it's temporary until April.
Yes.
So, what happens in April?
In April, before April, the petitioner can seek, or any of the other GSA contractors may seek an automatic extension.
And they might not get it.
They may not get it, for all we know. I don't see how you, maybe there's a ripeness problem or maybe a finality, but I do not see how you can call it moot when they've got the power of the sword of Damocles is not that it falls, but it hangs. You've got that sword hanging over them that April 15, you can't do your business anymore. Unless we decide as an act of grace to extend your exemption.
That is true, Your Honor.
If that's true, then how can you say this is moot?
Well, because we believe that the provision providing for the extension of the exemption enables the petitioner to continue on its...
And why do they need an extension? If they've got all they could need, then you wouldn't say it's a one-year exemption.
Well,
that doesn't make sense, counsel.
Can I try the questions? Can I try a slightly different twist on the question?
Yes.
Okay. They're protected through April, right?
Yes.
Okay. If we heard this case and ruled on the merits for them, they'd be protected indefinitely.
Yes.
So the case is not moot.
Very well, Your Honor. I'd like to move on to the fact that this is not a final agency action.
Did you start with mootness because you think that's a stronger argument than
yes,
finality?
Yes, we do.
Do.
Because of the issuance of the exemption, they were able to continue.
The temporary exemption can't possibly moot it.
Yes, Your Honor. The petition, however, should also be denied because the warning letter was not the authoritative final word of the agency in this matter. The warning letter is not self-executing, but required further administrative process before penalties would attach.
What was the reaction to the letter? Weren't there seven parties that got the letter?
Yes. And
what did the other six do?
To the enforcement's office, understanding all six of the others stopped their contract.
Now, this is more than a warning letter, right? So CSI is warned to cease and desist from any further activity.
Or be subject to the penalties.
But it was ordered to cease and desist what it was doing. They had to change
course.
It was
warned to cease and desist, and it is not self-executing. The other thing that I think we need to recognize here
But it isn't. For example, in Standard Oil, there was a determination that there was reason to believe that there might have been need for enforcement proceedings. That this letter doesn't have the tone of that. This letter has the tone of an investigation has taken place, and you are in violation. Stop now. And wouldn't you agree that's different than what started off the action in Standard Oil?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the tone is stronger,
This isn't the beginning of an investigation. It says, based on this information, CSI has been acting as an unauthorized indirect air carrier. violations of section also could, anyway, an investigation looks like it had already taken place and a determination had been made.
By the enforcement office.
It didn't seem to be anything tentative about this.
Well, the enforcement office letter, as I said, is not self-executing. In order for the enforcement office to enforce compliance with that letter, it has to issue a notice and an opportunity for hearing and go through the administrative process. The other alternative, of course, is to proceed and seek an exemption, which is what
but
the
don't we have case law that says judicial review is permissible in these situations so that we don't have to put the regulated entity to the test of either costly compliance or costly litigation?
No, and in fact, I believe that the case of Florida and Power and Light was very similar to that. Of course, that dealt with the rulemaking, not the exemption process here. But nonetheless, the court said that because it interferes with the agency processing, that it's appropriate to petitioner has an opportunity to pursue either, even though it's in the predicament, it does have the opportunity to pursue the administrative process.
No, you don't mean pursue it. What can it do subject to defending against an enforcement proceeding?
It could file for an exemption, which is exactly what it did here. The other thing I think I would like to point out here was that
once you've required them to file for an exemption, haven't you treated it as a final order yourself? If it's not a final order, why do they need to be exempt from it?
The goal of the department here is to get them into compliance. The other thing about
yes,
the order,
right.
That's right. The other thing that I think you have to recognize about the order, it's about the letter that was written, was that what the department did was as soon as the petitioner came in and said, we have these contracts, including one that extends beyond the 180 days, the department said, fine, you can continue to perform that contract. And while the exemption petition is underway and before it was even a final order, the petitioner sought and obtained additional contracts from GSA.
I don't understand why, in response to Chief Judge Sintel's question, you said they had to file for an exemption.
In order to be in compliance with our...
Why couldn't they have just said, start your administrative proceedings. We think we're right. Prove your case.
Well, and that's exactly right. Had they not filed for that exemption, that's
but there's no obligation
the
to.
Office.
There's no see when you put it in terms of well, they then had an obligation to file a request for an exemption, then your letter sounds final. Mm-hmm. But that's not right, is it?
Well, maybe I misspoke. They had the option to file for an exemption,
right.
Or they could have not filed for the exemption.
They could have just continued their business. And put the government to force the government to prove its case, right?
Absolutely.
To initiate an administrative proceeding and prove its case, right?
Absolutely, yes. Your Honor, I'd also like, with my remaining time, to address the third argument, which is that the petition should be denied because DOT acted within its statutory authority to investigate transportation.
I want to ask you about arbitrary and capricious behavior on the part of the agency. Even in formal rulemaking, let alone something as informal as this, we expect the agency to respond to reasoned arguments in opposition. Here you have another government agency coming in opposing what you're doing, don't you?
Actually, I don't believe that is accurate or played out by the record. In fact, if you look at Joint Appendix 254 and Joint Appendix 225, you'll see the GSA's express indications that they, in fact, do not express the same opinion the petitioner expressed. And I'd quote from 254 where it says, GSA would support action that DOT determines appropriate via exemption or otherwise that would permit air charter brokers to continue to perform their GSA contracts as well as the contracts the brokers may have with other agencies. In addition, the GSA cited...
This is following 2.5 pages, or 2 pages at least, of why they don't need you to be doing this nanny state regulation at all.
Well, actually,
and now they're saying, yeah, but if you're going to do it, then we'd support the exemption.
Actually, Your Honor,
where does your agency deal with what GSA had to say? Not in your arguments, but in the agency proceeding, not ex post facto by counsel.
In the final order.
Where?
If you look at I believe it's the last two tabs in the joint appendix. There is the show cause order as well as the final order, where the department lays out its views in terms of whether this exemption is necessary. Mm-hmm. I also would like to point out.
Right, tell me about where in there you respond to GSA's comments.
Sure. If you would look, it's at Joint Appendix 264.
Okay.
And if you look in the center two paragraphs, there is discussion there, our decision where we have addressed specifically GSA's discussions. In fact, we've specifically indicated that we give great weight to the views of GSA in this
that
matter.
That would permit the air brokers to continue to perform their activities for the agency.
Yes.
But where you are purporting to be limiting these entities doing the activities for the agency, right? I mean, this is supportive of the exemption.
Yes.
But what about the letter that this is an exemption from? That's what they're appealing from, is the initial restriction, the cease and desist order.
Your Honor.
GSA does not seem to be supportive of the cease and desist order. It seems to be wanting to be able to contract with these charterers.
That's right.
And I don't see where the agency, where your agency ever came to grips with that.
Well, Your Honor, what the enforcement office did was, after they had sat down with the petitioner and discussed this and provided the opportunity for an exemption, since the petitioner immediately filed for an exemption, the enforcement office considered that compliance was underway, so the enforcement office did not respond directly to the arguments that the petitioner had raised, I believe, in a November 25th letter.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I would like to point out for the court is that this is not regulation for regulation, or as you had described it, as nanny state regulations. In fact, the purpose of this, the rulemaking that we have discussed and the focus on this was really as a direct result, and we cited it in page 8 of our brief, of the rulemaking that is underway. The rulemaking was initiated because of a recommendation of the Natural Transportation Safety Board, which had, after investigating a crash in California, had said that there were non-causal factors that it felt could nevertheless play a role in the safety choices that customers make when contracting with, among other things, air charter companies. So NTSB found a safety link to DOT's economic licensing and certification requirements that they thought DOT should address. So the purpose of this was not regulation for regulation's sake, but in purpose because it had become a safety issue.
Nonetheless, GSA seems to be saying we don't need you. We have methods of looking after them.
And that may be true, as we've noted in our brief.
Since it may be true, DOT should have been able to answer it. And it may be that if we were to send this back, that unarbitrarily and uncapriciously, you could get that answer. But without it, doesn't this look arbitrary and capricious?
Well, I think what the department is entitled to do is to proceed with the rulemaking, because like with other types of indirect brokers.
This doesn't interfere with your proceeding with the rulemaking.
But the rulemaking addresses the issues specifically raised by their activities.
Is the rulemaking underway now?
Yes, it is underway, and in fact,
What's the status of it?
ANPRM is in, and a consultant has been hired and is currently doing an economic analysis. The NPRM is in internal.
But it hasn't been issued. It hasn't been issued, right?
No, it has not. There is an internal date set, but it has not been made public yet. And the new rulemaking is expected to be moving forward promptly as soon as the NPRM is issued.
Can I ask a question that would be about the merits here? I was a little confused. As I understand, this certificate is for the required certificate is for common carriers, right? I mean, air transportation is defined in the statute as the transportation of passengers or property by aircraft as a common carrier. And we don't have that here, do we?
Actually,
CSI, these are government contracts.
That question is answered at Joint Appendix 270, which is the exemption order, where the department has, in the final order, specifically responded to that question, which was raised by one of the commenters to the exemption proceeding. And the department said that the provision of air services for U.S. government agencies through the GSA contracting system constitutes an engagement of air transportation. So the department addressing specifically that claim regarding common carriage, which is air transportation, applies.
How is that common carriage? I mean, let's just common carriage is a phrase that has existed for a long time, and that
because
you just can't magically take a wand and do away with it.
Right, because it's the act of holding out for air transportation. That is common carriage. That is
the way that's a much broader definition than we've generally run into. We run into that term common carriage
quite a bit. Yeah.
Across lots of agencies.
Well, as I said,
Transportation Board, FCC.
If you go to their website, I think there's a little question that they do hold themselves out to be for common carriage to some, but that's not what's going on here. These are chartering flights for government agencies, right?
That's correct, but the department.
I mean, I couldn't come to them and get this right. What we're talking about here?
No, you'd have to be a certificated
air carrier.
That's
not common carriage.
Yes, you'd have to be a certificated air carrier in order to engage in as a common carrier. And that's one of the things that we've said is that the air charter brokers are indirect air carriers because they act as principals between the charter customer, GSA.
It's not common carriage. What's involved in this case is not common carriage. So why do you have any authority here?
Because it's the
certificate only goes for common carriage, right? The requirement of certificates. No, it doesn't?
Well, it goes for the engagement of air transportation,
and
which
air transportation?
The department has determined applies.
I thought I was reading from the statute. The statute defines air transportation as transportation of passengers or property by aircraft as a common carrier.
Well, I'd like to turn you to what the department's pronouncement on this is, which is if you look at the bottom of 269, where one of the commenters had specifically said that the services do not constitute common carriage and therefore air transportation because of the limited scope of holding out done by the broker.
Mm-hmm.
The department said, we disagree. The department found that...
Did the department say anything about the statute? The statutory definition of air transportation.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I don't see it.
Didn't, once again, isn't that something we would have expected the department to respond to? I mean, since the statute says what it says and since the point was raised, isn't it arbitrary and capricious to act without responding?
Well, in this case, I'm reading from the final order, and the final order is not what has been under review right here.
Thank you, counsel.
You have no further questions?
No, I think, unless I see none. Thank you, counsel. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal, counsel.
Let me go back to address whether or not the warning letter or the cease and desist letter is a final order. And I urge the court to look at that very carefully because the department...
That's why we asked all these questions.
Yes, Your Honor.
We look before we get entered.
Yes, absolutely. What the Department of Transportation has done here is, with one letter, regulated the entire GSA contracting process. With one letter. They extended their regulation of indirect air carriers for public charter regulations to government contracting. Heretofore, there has never been any indication that the Department of Transportation has ever attempted to regulate government contracting in this fashion.
Do you know the case that we just handed down this year, Unity 08 versus FEC? Because there we wrote, parties are commonly not required to violate an agency's legal position and risk an enforcement proceeding before they may seek judicial review.
No, Your Honor.
That helps you, doesn't it?
It helps me quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Well, having said that, I think that what's happening here is that we're faced with a decision where, with our appeal rights, we are confident that the department's position is this is a final order in that they have the authority, definitive authority, to pursue enforcement action for violations of indirect air carriage with respect to government contracts. We just don't see it. This case could have been resolved easily by the general counsel of the Department of Transportation picking up the telephone and calling the general counsel of the GSA, Chris Dermond, and essentially said, Chris, this is Bob or Rob here. I want to talk to you about this issue we have brewing. Well, before the October 16th letter, none of this happened. By definition, or in accordance with the APA, the government agencies have to talk to one another. CSI is merely a pawn in this, trying to figure out how to stay alive and how to survive.
Okay, given your time is up. You want to finish that sentence?
Given the very difficult situation that we face. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Give us recess. Case is submitted. Give us recess.